This is the Pitchfork Review. I'm Pooja Patel, the editor of Pitchfork. And today I'm here with Laura Less and Dylan Brady of 100 Gex.
Hello.
How's it going?
If you haven't heard of them yet, 100 Gex is a wildly popular musical duo. Their breakout song was last year's explosive Money Machine. Which was a good example of what was to come. This unique, heavily layered, semi-chaotic sound that has polarized music critics, even within Pitchfork. So I think first things first, is it 100 Gex or 100 Gex?
Isn't there a third option too?
100 Gex.
Yeah, that's the one.
It's either 100 Gex, 100 Gex, or 100 Gex.
Or 100, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you don't have a preference.
Jury's out on that one.
Jury's for sure out.
How do you refer to yourselves? Dylan and Laura?
Those knuckleheads.
100 Geese.
Laura, what music were you making when you came across Dylan?
I was making like sort of like singer-songwriter stuff, but I always knew that I would want a drum in there somewhere.
Dylan, what were you doing?
I was producing rap songs for some friends of mine at the time. I hadn't really made my own music at that point, I think. I was just kind of like doing the producer grind, chopping up samples and shit.
Doing very good at it.
So when you guys first met, how did you start collaborating? What did that look like?
First, there was a long time of us just being like, oh yeah, we should do something. Yeah, totally. And like, mostly just like hanging out.
Mm-hmm. What were you listening to?
Nightcore remixes on YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeezus.
Fuck yeah.
What else were we listening to?
Ex-military, perhaps?
I guess it would be later, but like early OPN. John Zorn.
Fuck yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We were like, these things are hitting similarly for both of us.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like very, very naturally, a lot of people listen to your music and they think of PC music, or they use that as kind of a launch pad to understand it. PC music, for those who might not be familiar with it, is the label and artist collective that was founded back in the day now by A.G. Cook. I remember I was an editor at Spin when that was all rising, and like when Sophie's Bip landed, and literally everyone was just like, holy shit, this is a revelation. Like, this is going to change music forever. Do you guys remember that? Like, do you remember when you first engaged with PC music and what that felt like?
Yeah.
Yes. I was in the back of my friend's car. It was like really hot and really late, and they played GFOTY Cake Mix. Mm-hmm. That was the first thing I heard. And I was like, holy shit, this is it. This is, I feel like I've been waiting my whole life until this moment to hear this.
No, I mean, that's the vibe. I was like extremely like depressed in my apartment in Chicago and was just like, I'm going to go on YouTube. And I saw the Halloween mix. It was like at some point in like 2014.
It's Halloween. Watch out. It's not a ghost that's behind you. Where's your boyfriend? He's in a pool. Girlfriend of the year.
Girlfriend of the year.
Definitely this part.
I've eaten your pet bird. Now I'm going to break into your house and see all the demons under your bed.
And I was just like, dude. Like, depression lapsed for a minute and was just like, okay. Like, the ray of God beams shining down from the clouds. I was like, this is the craziest shit I've ever experienced.
Yeah, I feel like in that moment, part of the kind of like brain explosion there was that it felt so alien, but also extremely familiar and like hooky and danceable and like accessible. And I'm wondering from your perspective, especially as people who are now making music that is kind of tangentially related in some folks' minds, like, what does PC music sound like? Could you break down what makes that genre or collective sound uniquely like them?
Huge, huge vocals, more vocals.
Extreme sounds.
Vocals. There's a reason they call it a kick drum. Super saws. Just going nutty, you know? Just going absolutely hog wild. It's really cool to listen to something that's not so layered that you can't, like, it's so simple, so you can, like, kind of, like, consciously listen to, like, everything that's happening at the same time, which I think makes it sound more overwhelming than things that, you know, they're layered so heavy that, you know, you kind of get hit with the wash, which is also a cool vibe, but, like, PC music was really great because it sounds so clean and so, like, because each part is so distinct and doing its own thing.
Yeah. I feel like it gets the rep of, like, being super maximalist, but it doesn't seem that way to me. Like,
yeah, I agree.
They all seem very minimal. I don't know. There's, like, no extraneous pieces.
Yeah, I actually feel like it can be, like, pretty emotionally vulnerable.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
For something that is...
huge range.
Yeah, that is, like, pegged as, like you said, as maximalist.
I was talking to somebody, like, in the early days that was saying the opposite. They were like, I hate that kind of music because it's so, like, divorced from any emotion. And I was like, I do not understand that perspective.
Seems hyper-emotional to me.
It's so poppy and, like, I mean, back then, I think especially there was, like, this idea of, like, pop is, you know, plastic, but, like,
yeah, sure.
I think maybe not everyone was seeing through the plastic to the people behind.
So when did you first actually meet A.G. Cook? What was that like?
Like, right when I moved here, I was staying at this place off Melrose, and I was going to this ramen spot a lot. And I went there and I saw AG there. I was like, holy shit. Like, I gotta say something. I was like, hey, big fan. Are you? Or I was like, hey, are you AG Cook? He's like, yeah. I was like, see you later, dude.
Stunned silence. Do you feel like you still have a like light fanboy situation or like light kind of starstruck situation with him?
Meeting him was so nuts because I just wanted to like just be like, oh my god, when you did this on this and when you did this on this, but I like tried so hard to play it cool. I was like
still trying.
Yo,
to do that with
AG
him.
Huge fan, love the stuff that you've done.
You make music, right?
Hey, you have a pretty good song or two, you know?
It's pretty good.
I would argue that I think a lot of people have that relationship with Gex. I think that they feel like Gex is kind of revolutionary and revelatory. And I remember when I first heard Money Machine, I was both very excited and then cautiously optimistic. And it's rare when you listen to so much music where you're like, this could bode well for the future of music, you know, when you hear something new.
Wow. Those are very kind words. Thank you so much.
I mean, I don't know if you guys know this about me, but I was a dance music critic for like...
What's the best dance?
The Soulja Boy is actually the best dance.
I think longest running number one that is self-produced.
Really? Is that true?
Do you know
true?
This off the cuff, or are you?
Yeah, I pretty into the Billboard Hot 100.
Yeah,
interesting.
We always talk about like what we would do if we had interns, and Dylan said that if he had an intern, he would get them to catalog every Billboard 100 and make them sortable by
instrument, key, tempo, BPM.
Wow, that's such a good project.
Pitch correction, speed of auto-tune.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, for real. Like songs that have no drums yeah. that reach number one.
Yeah.
Great metrics.
Louis Capaldi, I think, is the most recent one.
No drums.
Dylan, wow.
Louis Capaldi, Someone You Loved.
Is that the one that's like, I was getting used to being someone you loved.
I was getting kind of used to being someone you loved.
Drums don't come in later in that?
Never. No bass even.
Is it good?
I like it. Yeah.
Yeah. Not many number one songs are bad, I feel like.
I don't want to like litigate Imagine Dragons with you right now, but I would argue that there are some.
You want to do
that? I would argue there are some number one songs that have not been good.
Which one?
Not Radioactive. What's the other one?
Thunder?
Yes.
Thunder, feel the thunder. Lightning and the thunder. Thunder, thunder, feel the thunder. Lightning and the thunder.
You don't think Thunder is good?
No. I can't.
If one of my friends made Thunder, I would be like, you are super good at making music and should definitely pursue this. Like, this is hella good. There's no way you can hear Thunder on a big-ass system and be like, that song fucking
Dylan's,
sucks.
Dylan's metric for what is a good song is so great. You can be like, you could be like, I don't know if I love that song or whatever. And Dylan's like, if you were listening to this in on a huge sound system and your friend made it and you were hearing it, you wouldn't be like, wow, this is great. He has many, many metrics that will convince you that a song is amazing.
I'm not super into Thunder, but...
look who's walking it back now.
It's fucking good though.
Also, the bias of if your friend made it is so great.
Yeah, I
like,
agree.
If my friend made most like many just fine songs, I'd be like, this is fucking fantastic.
Dylan's been.
I'm so proud of you.
A lot of me and Laura's friends make songs all the time.
They're incredible.
And how many are as good as Thunder?
Several.
Yeah, true.
To return Banana. To Money Machine, though, I would say that like for someone who doesn't necessarily have the kind of roots in like or haven't listened to PC music or like don't relate necessarily to the disparate styles of music that you guys use separately, it can be a lot. A practical question, because I've listened to Hand Crush by a Mallet and the remix back and forth over and over and over again. When you're making a song like that, what is the first step?
That one started...
Dylan had an experience.
Just with
an
like
experience
the...
in the studio.
Yeah. There was a pest in my quarters. That was dealing much damage to my brain. And I... regrettably had to stamp that pest
oh
out.
Oh my God. The terminology.
Using a book that you find people in.
Are you for real?
Based in Hollywood.
This is for real.
We also don't lie, but this is also not a lie.
Was the pest a rodent or a bug?
That would be so nuts.
It had six legs.
It was a rodent. That would be awful.
Yeah, if I kill.
That's why I
would be like,
I mean,
no. I mean,
it had six legs.
I still object to killing insects, but you know.
Me too.
Yeah, but so does Dylan. Yeah. Sometimes it just happens.
It was regrettable.
So did you start writing about it? Were you playing with some instrumentals already and then this came to be? Or like, how did the song form?
I was kind of working on random stuff that whole day and dealing with that kind of dark force that was in my room. And just like building up tension in my head. And I think like after the pest departed.
Dearly.
The pest.
The pest, yeah. I started with some vocals on this synth arp that I was working on.
In this song, it has, as many of your songs do, this kind of very purposeful use of auto-tune and voice manipulation. And I think this goes back a little bit to what we were saying before, where it's like deliberately artificial, but also feels very vulnerable and human in that kind of artifice or that manipulation. And I'm curious, like, why is that such a central part of your vocals?
See, me personally, I'm, now this is, it might shock you, not really a great singer. So auto-tune hitting incredibly hard for me. I think that it's great to emotive, it's still a voice on the other end. It's the most emotive instrument. So you can still express a lot of stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like we could do the not as hardcore settings of it for sure, but just feels right all the way at zero. I don't know.
It feels so right.
It feels very right when it goes from like, you do the 10 retune speed where you can like, ah, oh, that person's like the Drake auto tune. Mm-hmm. But then you slide it all the way down and it's
best. I'll never go on your studio. You won't think of words when you write it up. You just hear me singing the song. You think that's
okay. You just sing along. You just copy everything we do. I love that you guys are able to jump from peak elements of different genres like very smoothly and naturally. In the remix for Hand Crush by a Mallet, I feel like there's that one point where it drops into this like experimental R&B. It reminds me of like when Fade to Mine and Night Slugs and all of that was popping.
Fade to Mind and Night Slugs getting me through 2014 before I found PC Music.
Right?
I was bumping those remixes. That whole EP, I was like, yeah. I cannot believe this exists.
I was not tuned into any of that.
Yeah, I mean, Dylan, even if you're not tuned into it, it like hits for me in this remix. Like I feel a murmur of that right before we lean into this like peak emo Patrick Stump pop banger. And it feels like a lot, but it feels super cohesive. And I think a lot of people want to know what elements of Gex are irony, if there is any, and what is earnest fandom, or if it's a blend of the two. So many of these songs sound like either heavily researched or just from a place of like archived fandom.
Archived fandom.
Yeah, that's
is a good
great
thing.
A great term. We're not going to put anything on the record that we think is stupid.
Yeah.
That sounds so stupid to say. We genuinely enjoy all of these styles.
Just because you're having fun doesn't mean you're being ironic.
Yeah.
I mean, people hate ska, I guess. Ska is so hated. I feel like ska and dubstep are like, get incredible amounts of shit. So people think that that's like, oh, you're doing the ska and dubstep thing. I just gotta leave this place with a big bag. So I found a fucking jockey and I grabbed it.
Yeah, stole his phone, put him in his place. It's funny how people try to project irony onto things that weren't cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. No more guilty pleasures.
No more guilty pleasures, 2021.
I hate that phrase.
It's so bad.
A useless phrase. Yeah. Pleasure is just literally pleasure.
If yeah, it's good, it's good. You're not kidding.
Yeah, unless it's Imagine Dragons, which is just not good.
If it makes you happy, it can't be that bad.
Wow.
I guess true. That's not a universal truth.
That's
but I
a case by case.
That's a very case by case. That's a very case by case quote, but relevant here.
Yeah. In this case.
In musical listening terms, if it makes you happy, it can't be that bad.
Hey, I'm journalist Sam Sanders.
I'm poet Saeed Jones.
And I'm producer Zach Stafford. And we are the hosts of a podcast called Vibe Check.
On Vibe Check, we talk about everything. News, culture, and entertainment, and how it all feels.
That's right. We talk about any and everything on our show, from real life issues like grief to music and movie critiques. And that barely scratches the surface.
Yes, indeed. And it doesn't stop there. We have got a lot to say. So join our group chat, come to life. Follow and listen to Vibe Check wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, friends. I'm Alamine Abdul-Mahmoud. I'm the host of the new podcast, Commotion. If you don't know about us yet, well, we are your daily deep dive into the biggest stories coming out of the world of pop culture, art, and entertainment. And luckily, I'm not going to be doing it alone, okay? I'll be joined by some brilliant culture writers and thoughtful superfans. We're going to have hilarious hot takes. We're going to have vibrant debates. Consider this your invitation to join the group chat. Get in here and join us. Commotion, available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now it's time to talk about hyperpop.
Let's talk about hyperpop.
Hyperpop.
Hyperpop, which is this like very nebulous term that has come to light, very popularly associated with Gex and some of your contemporaries. I guess my question is, do you relate to this term? Would you use this term yourself?
Where to start? in your mind, do you think that we fit into the genre hyperpop?
Yes, because one, I think that a lot of it is anchored on your music. So I think that the term came around in part as related to you and your music, which is part of it. But also because it feels like a stacking of genres at their peak elements. So like, it's extremely relatable. It's extremely, if you want it to be, nostalgic, and it's extremely hooky. It's hooks upon hooks. So for me, I define hyperpop very strongly as associated with Gex.
Then by that definition, I'm liking it.
Well, okay, so let me actually expand on that. Like, what do you think it's used to describe? Like, what does hyperpop signify?
It's a pretty wide-reaching term. Like, when we were curating the hyperpop playlist, the Spotify one,
yeah,
I think we had so few similar songs to what they had on it previously.
Yeah.
But using like the definition of hyperpop, it still fit.
Yeah, so how did you curate that? Are there artists that you feel land safely and snugly in hyperpop canon?
Yes.
Yeah.
For sure. Like pretty much all the PC music stuff.
Doria and Electra.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of like post PC music. I think a lot of like sound design porn type stuff,
mm-hmm,
would be corralled under that term too, if it evokes pop elements.
Post Sophie shit.
Yeah. Sophie. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's also like stuff that is pre PC that I think could like Pop the Glock, I would say, could be
for sure
in that playlist.
Yeah. 100%.
Pop the Glock you pop. If you had a line, it's your bang pop. Pop the Glock you pop. If you had a line, it's your bang pop. Off is banging, off is banging.
It seems like hyperpop is such an undefined term that
yeah.
there are lots of artists that could be under that term, like, but everyone's making their own metric for it, you know?
Yeah.
Did you guys see the kind of internet controversy around A.G. Cook's hyperpop playlist? The whole thing about how he included Nicki Minaj and then Fancy by Iggy Azalea and Charlie. And some of the hyperpop fans were really upset by this.
Oh, Fancy with Iggy and Charlie? Yeah. I feel like Fancy probably fits under the umbrella.
Yeah, I think the why of that is what is hard to pin down. Why Fancy? Why does Fancy fit?
I'd say Charlie's parts. If you could isolate yeah. those, yes. I don't think there would be as much contest if you could isolate Charlie's mm-hmm. parts on it.
Yeah, like the chorus sounds much more like a hyperpop thing than like any Iggy Azalea part.
Yeah.
If we're trying to whittle it down, this is like a real brain exercise for myself too, but if we're trying to whittle it down to a production standpoint, like, do we have any sense of what it is, or is it more of a feeling?
It's like so case by case. There's like,
yeah,
you could say it's like super saws with goofy snares and like big minimal bass with gaps, or it could be like sped up punk song with auto-tune vocals, mm-hmm. or like a slow ballad with a pad.
Yeah. I feel like some people wouldn't call all of those things hyperpop, though. So I think everybody draws the line in the sand at a different point.
Yeah.
Because, yeah. like, for me, like, my definition of hyperpop, I'm putting, like, Britney Spears in there. Like, I'm putting Baby One More Time in there. Lots of Max Martin songs going in that mm-hmm. bucket. I wish we had like a panel here that could just do like really quick votes, because like I would love to see what a panel of like 100 people thought was and wasn't. So like Searle, yeah. do people think Searle is hyperpop? I for sure would put like Searle as hyperpop, but I'm sure some people wouldn't.
Right.
Yeah.
But it shares a lot of the elements that people would associate if you were trying to define hyperpop.
How about where are you now?
Yeah, true. Like would people
no.
say that?
No.
It's going under my umbrella for sure.
See,
it's going definitely
it has
going
like,
under my umbrella.
Is it? But what is it? What is it about it that makes it hyperpop?
It's got the bass doing the polyrhythm. It's got the crazy sounds. It's got the snares. It's got the.
It's got
crazy energy.
It's got lots of things. But it doesn't. It's not part of the scene.
It's not part of the scene for sure.
So if Jack U came out now, would
they
be
considered hyperpop?
Hyperpop.
Well, that's hypothetical music, right? We wouldn't know. Maybe. What's the song that Skrillex did for the Kingdom Hearts thing? Face My Fears.
That song is so fucking good.
Would you consider Face My Fears hyperpop?
More so than Where Are You Now?
Okay, now follow-up question. if some person online released Face My Fears and I retweeted it, would you think that it was hyperpop?
For sure.
Interesting. I think I would be biased towards it, yes.
Yeah, I kind of, that was sort of a leading question I've kind of figured, but like, maybe it really is just as much a group of people as it is, which, and that's a scary thought, right? Because mm-hmm. like, you know, you don't want to narrow it down to a group of people because that could make it super exclusionary. I think that that's one problem that a lot of like critics of hyperpop have with it, is that it seems to be a sort of exclusionary scene.
Yeah.
Certainly trying to not make it that.
Yeah, that's worst case scenario.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And see, that's like part of the reason that I have such a whatever, you know, relationship with the term and us being associated with the term is I do not want to be associated with something that is like, you know, seems like such a small group of people.
Gatekeepery.
Yeah.
Anything, any exclusive club, fuck that.
Yeah.
Well, what do you feel like your role is in like fostering new artists or welcoming them or, you know, highlighting them? Do you feel an obligation of any sort?
I mean, it just so happens that we ended up with a lot of followers and people that if we recommend music, people will listen to it. So, I mean, it's cool to be like, whoa, this song is really good and doesn't have super many listens. And this person is really cool. And just be like, I like this song. And people are like, wow, yeah, that song is very good. And it has more listens now.
It's also cool because there's like so many new kids that are doing such crazy
oh
shit
my God.
That we're just fans
yeah.
of. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
The like kind of next wave, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think like regardless of the name, we just like we're doing a playlist and like all these new artists and shit that people hadn't known before and wanted to include them in some place that is gonna be seen by more people.
Yeah, I was gonna ask, are there any artists that you're like super excited about right now?
Parker, aka yeah. Quinn.
Parker.
What's a song that you would recommend?
Bad Idea.
Produced by Black Winterwells, which is another great artist who would not describe herself as hyperpop. That's why this whole thing of defining hyperpop and just it's this word that doesn't mean anything, but it does have power. It's like a this like symbol that you can be like, this, wow, hey, check this out, this is hyperpop, and people will be like, I'm gonna listen to that.
Yeah,
the playlist is a useful tool for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
I also think that's why, I mean, for better or for worse, I'm curious how you guys feel about this too, the Spotify playlist feels like that's where the definition of hyperpop is now being litigated, because that playlist feels influential.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, I think totally.
Part of the appeal to me of your music is that the stacking of genres and these like very syncable like reference points really makes the stuff accessible. Like you can like 4 different types of music and not be into the other ones, and they'll all be on the same song, and that creates relatability for me.
That's cool. I never thought about that.
And I wonder, like, and that's why earlier when I was saying I was cautiously optimistic when I heard Money Machine, is because it, whenever there's a musical movement or a genre that feels like it can unify people who like different things, that feels positive to me. So I am curious, like, forget trying to define what hyperpop is, but when you think about hyperpop and like the hyperpop community and kind of your role in it, what do you feel like this could do for music going forward, for pop music going forward, for the way that people try to experiment with how they produce music?
I think at its best, it produces a way for artists who might go unappreciated to be appreciated, and people who are, you know, on mm-hmm. their own making just stuff that they love and but might not fit under a definition super well, to have an audience and have a community of people, and everybody has mm-hmm. a place at the table.
Accessibility,
yeah. And you can have it.
A big theme for us.
You can have it all together. Even if it, you know, you said it's sort of chaotic and a mishmash, right? So if there's varying styles of chaotic mishmash all together, then, you know, that's great. It has like you have a playlist of hyperpop that's like a big soup.
Yeah, it seems like with that, it's very down to people to push boundaries more so than other type. You can do wacky shit and get away with it more so.
Get away with whatever.
Yeah. People can find their home wherever they want to find it.
Totally.
Well, last question for you guys is, what's coming up? What are you guys working on? I feel there's an album on the horizon.
There is an album on the horizon. We are currently working on the follow-up to 1000 Gex.
Will you be in the studio with anyone?
We're in with Randy Newman.
Honestly, dream collab.
Getting in with Randy Newman. Ugh.
He's an incredible songwriter.
Incredible. Yes,
we've been in with him. It's great.
Randy Newman's hyperpop. Randy Newman's hyperpop.
You got a friend in me?
You got a friend in me.
Gex remix.
You got a friend in me. Roll ahead and you miles and miles and miles from a nice warm bed.
If you want to hear the songs that we talked about on this episode, check out our Spotify playlist. It's called The Pitchfork Review, Music from the Podcast. And if you need some new music while you're waiting for the next 100 Gex album, give us a call at 917-524-7371. Leave us a voicemail and Pitchfork's music critics will try to recommend you something new. Again, that number is 917-524-7371. We'll play a few of your messages and suggest some music on an upcoming episode. The Pitchfork Review is hosted by me, Pooja Patel. Special thanks to Laura Less and Dylan Brady for coming on the episode. You can follow 100 Gex on Twitter at 100 Gex. You can follow me at Sonari. You can follow Pitchfork on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Pitchfork. This episode was produced by Ben Montoya and Caitlin Pierce. It was edited by Todd Whitney and Andy Cush. Our executive producer is Alex Kappelman. Our original music is by Andrew Epen of Basement Crafts. This episode was mixed and scored by Ben Montoya. Special thanks to Noah Yu, Kat Zhang, and Amy Phillips. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to leave us a review and subscribe to the podcast. You can also send an email to podcast@pitchfork.com with any feedback. Thanks for listening and see you next week.
Hey friends, I'm Alamine Abdul-Mahmoud. I'm the host of the new podcast, Commotion. If you don't know about us yet, well, we are your daily deep dive into the biggest stories coming out of the world of pop culture, art, and entertainment. And luckily, I'm not going to be doing it alone, okay? I'll be joined by some brilliant culture writers and thoughtful superfans. We're going to have hilarious hot takes. We're going to have vibrant debates. Consider this your invitation to join the group chat. Get in here and join us. Commotion, available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.